We stumbled into a couple of interesting topics in this week's episode of The Chirp with Darren Millard, and we cover a whole lot of ground. Dave Tippett, his job title may say head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, but I'm telling you right now, he could add storyteller to his list of abilities. The man can tell a tale. It's all coming up with Tip on this week's episode of The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Really growing on me, Stammer. Really starting to grow on me.
What are you going to do?
You!
You guys are sensitive over there.
This is going to be fun. Dave Tippett is going to talk about things that, well, quite frankly, I'm not sure he's discussed in a long, long time with anybody, never mind during the course of an interview. It just stuff keeps popping up, like one of those fair games, like the whack-a-mole. It just kept popping up. At the time of this recording, ladies and gentlemen, and that's podcast speak for I can be as specific as I want right now, knowing that you could be listening to this anytime up to 2027 when this podcast self-destructs. We have 2 weeks left in this 56-game COVID-condensed schedule and the regular season, playoff spots being clearer and clearer. We've got matchups starting to take shape. And in the Scotiabank North Division, let's focus on that right now. Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Montreal all look pretty good. I know it's kind of wonky because Vancouver has so many games left, but they all look like the four teams that are going to make it. It's the most anticipated division going into the season because everyone wanted to see Canadian teams just playing Canadian teams. Well, it's also the only division where nobody was able to be in the rink to watch it firsthand, which meant everybody missed out seeing eye to eye Connor McDavid's ridiculous season. Head coach Dave Tippett, he watched it, though, unfold from behind the bench, facing teams 10 times, Connor's brilliance, Leon Draisaitl and Connor back together. Mike Smith has been great. So let's catch up with the head coach of Dave Tippett watching this historic season, what he thinks on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Here's Tip. First, out of the gate, how long does somebody have to know you before they can officially call you Tip?
You know what? It's kind of been that way for a long time that I meet players for the first time and they've heard of me, and just about players or anybody that knows me calls me Tip most of the time. Other than people in the United States, they tend to call you coach more.
Yeah.
People don't know you, but people around the hockey world have called me Tip for a long time.
What do your closest friends call you? What's your nickname there?
Usually Tip.
There's a Mooseman guy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. You go all my buddies in hockey and stuff, you know, it's what's going on, Tip.
Let's get into your team a little bit. What's the biggest default or coaching sort of where you would slide it? Would you undercoach Connor and Leon, or would you overcoach Connor and Leon? What would you sort of default to?
I would try to overcoach them on defense and undercoach them on offense.
Is it unique coaching two players like that?
Well, it is. It's you have to allow them to do what they do best. And it's just like one of my philosophies is coaching. You have to try to maximize each player and each player's attributes. And you know, you've got role players that are a penalty killer. You got to give them the opportunity to do their thing there. Well, Connor and Leon are no different than that. You got to put them in positions where they can maximize their talents. And ultimately, when you have talents like that, they have an impact on the game. So it's, you know, they're both really driven guys. They've come back this year. They've really dug into the defending part of the game. For us to be a better team, they play so many minutes that they have to play both sides of the puck. And so they've really dug into that, but they still, to maximize what they can do, you have to let them maximize their talents.
Connor's in zone game, has it really improved, or are we just noticing it more? Transition, we're used to it, but boy, he seems to be able to take it to a new level in zone.
Yeah, small space stuff. That was one of the things we talked about as a team this year. We got to become a better small space team. And small spaces, I mean, like in zones, it can't just be all rush stuff. It has to be small spaces, defending kind of down around your net, in your corners and defending right, but small spaces is beating people one-on-one in the offensive zone to create space, you know? So that's an area that we've dug into as a team, but Connor is really, his whole game seems to have gone to another level this year. I think last year he was coming off that injury and he had worked hard on rehab the whole summer, but didn't have the opportunity to work on his game. And when he works on his game, it's puck movement, it's acceleration, it's edges, it's all the above and face-offs. And he's come back this year after a full summer of working on his game, and it's showing, you know, what he's doing now.
Do you have a secret code word that you tell the other coaches when you're going to put Connor and Leon together? When you go, what's the...
No, there's just times in a game when you just feel it's right, and then there's other times where we feel like we need balance, you know, so it's one of those things. When you do put them together, it seems like they take off. It's funny, like, when they're apart, Draisaitl is, a big centerman, ends up more of a passer, in a passer role as a centerman, but then when he gets to Connor, he's like another player. He's still a great passer, but he turns into a shooter. So it gives you different weapons to kind of look at.
Is that just natural or is that strategic?
It can be strategic sometimes when you're looking for a goal. You know, you're looking for somebody that can finish. Because the one thing about Draisaitl is he's a great passer and one of the best passers in the game. But he's also a heck of a shooter. Like he can one time it like nobody. You know, so to try to maximize those attributes, there's different times that you can maximize them. And McDavid he's the ultimate disher. Like he can find people and he beats people. And then when people go to overload on him, he'll find the open person. And that's what makes him so dangerous.
Are you tired of facing the other Canadian teams yet?
You know what? The only thing I was really looking forward to that this year. Yeah. And it is, it seems like you're in mini playoff series, all of them. But the thing that could just, if you put fans in it, it would be unbelievable.
Right.
Right. Like the emotion in the game, the games they're emotional because you love playing Toronto. You love playing Calgary, you know, like there's emotion in the games, but there's not the emotion that would be in the fans, mm-hmm. you know, like place to place you go into and all of a sudden it would, Saturday night game night doesn't feel the same, has the same aura as it used to without the fans.
Does that make what Connor's doing and challenging 100 points in 56 game season even more impressive?
Yeah, it does. It does. The fact that you're missing some of the emotion of the game. The other thing about the amazing thing about Connor too is you're playing mini playoff series, like we say, every single team, you're playing the same team over. If I'm the coach of those other teams and I've coached against Connor, you have a game plan against him every time. You know, sometimes that gets a little lost when you're playing the whole league and you're doing your California swing. I'm sure they mention him, but you're not playing him nine times where you're gearing up to try to stop him. You know, so that's the other thing about it. Teams have really dig in on how to stop him and the ability for him to still be as successful as he is. With that mindset of the other team it's really amazing.
So how long is your playoff prep going to be when you get ready for each series, at least the first two? Will it just be, okay, we'll go to the folder A.
Yeah.
Folder B.
Yeah. That's kind of the way it's been. We've lucky, we've had some breaks here. We're in a tough stretch here to kind of finish out, but we had a couple of breaks because of schedule stuff that we started doing a lot of that playoff mindset, more geared towards us, not the team we're going to play, but how we want to play. So we put some of that in place already. And then once we secure a spot, then you start looking at, who you might play and putting things together. But you're going to have a pretty good book on everybody. I mean, you play each team so much that it's you have a pretty good book on them. You
mentioned Connor a couple of times, but like Mike Smith's influence on your success this season, is that close to what Connor's impact has been?
Well, certainly you can't be a good team without quality goaltending. And, the first 10 games, Schmitty was hurt. We rode Koskinen pretty hard And then Schmitty came back, and he just took off. And I've been with Schmitty since he was a rookie, and had him in Arizona, and he is an ultra competitive guy, and has come in and just played really well. He's got a swagger about him that just our team, you know, they feed off that a little bit. And Koskinen, it's funny, Koskinen was, we overplayed him early. He didn't play as well as he would have liked in some of those games. And then since Mike's came back, Koskinen's numbers are very good also, and Mike's numbers are very good. So we feel like we've got that, you know, we're kind of solidified there. But Mike certainly has that swagger that he brings to the rink every day. He's got a work ethic. He's a vocal leader. So he's been a huge part of our success.
You've been around the game so long at so many different levels. Is it unusual that a team would kind of take its personality from the goaltender? Because Connor's your best player. Leon's your best player. Two best players. But Mike seems to be the person that they take on that aura.
Well, you see the aura you see more than, say, Connor or Leon would. I mean, Connor and Leon have their own aura. Nursey's got an aura, but Schmitty is—he's front and center. He's out there. You know, that's who he is. So, I've known actually one of my best friends that I played in Hartford with for years, Mike Liu, had that same aura about him.
Really?
We had those good teams in Hartford in the mid '80s, and Mike Liu was a driver of it. And I remember when we traded for him, I think it was the second game that he played. And Hartford, we were kind of languishing along. We thought we were a pretty good team. And then we traded for Mike Liu. And it was, I think, the second game he came, we were up 5-2 going into the third period against Vancouver. And we ended up losing 6-5. And I remember Mike came in the room. And Mike had just come from St. Louis, where I think he was the only guy that even came close to challenging Gretzky for an MVP there. St. Louis had a real good year. I remember he took his skate off and he threw it across the room and almost stuck in the wall. And he said, "You bleeping ever do that to me again, I'll kill you all." And that was a turning point for our team. Like he just like, this is unacceptable. Right. And there was a lot of guys in that room said, "All right, this guy's here. We're on board with this. Let's go." And then he was a great goaltender for us for two or three years in Hartford. But that was one of the ones that changed the attitude of that team.
And those teams had some high profile coaches, yourself, now Dino in Minnesota. I don't know whether he was on that particular team, but he was certainly cross paths. Joel Q.
Joel.
So of the three of you, who did you think wouldn't be a coach?
It's interesting. Like Joel, it's funny. Joel was always really smart, like just ultra smart guy. But then when he retired, he kind of went in the stockbroking business there for a while. I thought maybe he was going to go that direction. And then he turned back to coaching. And, you know, he's one of the all time greats in coaching now. So that was a good decision he made to come back to
coaching. Yes. And
it would have been successful in the broker business too, but it was a good decision on his part. But we had a lot of guys, like we had even guys that haven't been head coaches, a guy like Dougie Jarvis or Brent Peterson,
right?
You know, Kevin Dineen was there, Alfie Samuelson, just a ton of guys that were real smart hockey guys that I think there's at one time somebody wrote a story. I think there was over a 2 or 3 year period, I think there's 16 or 17 guys that coached either head coach or assistant coach in the NHL.
That's way too many smart guys in one room.
Yeah. Somebody actually, I just did a radio show this morning with Bob Stauffer.
Yep.
He was asking about the Hartford days. And he said, "Well, how come so many guys came out of there?" I said, "You know what? There wasn't many coaches, but we had Jack Evans and then we had Claude DeRose. And Claude, there was no special teams meetings or anything like that. So our special teams, like we'd have three or four of us stand in front of a chalkboard for a penalty kill and say, okay, here's what I think they're going to do. Here's what we got to do. And, you know, Liu would be involved in it, and Quinville and myself and Jarvis. And okay, that's what we're doing. Like there was no PK meetings or no video, anything like that. And so we sat around, we talked hockey all the time, whether it was in the dressing room after practice or after a game or, you know, going for lunch and a beer after practice, it was hockey all the time. We had a great group of guys.
So you didn't mention Ferraro in those meetings.
Ferraro is the right business. He's an announcer. he He was a good talker.
Yes, we had him on last week.
He was a good player and a really good talker. He went to the right business. No, he's a smart hockey guy. He just probably picked the right profession for him.
Yeah, he wasn't doing the PK. That's for sure. We know that. So tell me about now you've got a coach for almost every position, or it's going that way, and skills coaches and everything. Has it reached its max, do you think, or is there room still?
I'd like to think it's close to the max, because it's just what happens now is the head coach almost, you've got to manage your whole staff as well as manage the players. This year it's been, especially with these taxi squads and everything, it's been incredible. Like, you got a lot of people around. You got, most teams have two video guys now. Like, we have three assistant coach, a goalie coach, and then you've got a skating coach. You've got video guys. You've got strength and conditioning coaches. It's big staff. Now, we're not to the point of football or basketball yet. There's some basketball teams, they have a coach for every player on the team. And then I remember I played golf a couple of years ago with Bruce Ahrens down in Arizona. And I was asking, we were just talking about coaching. And I said, how many coaches do you have? And he goes, I got 27. And they were in, like, they were in a mini camp already. And we were golfing one morning at my club there. I said, aren't you guys in camp yet? Or spring training or something like that? He goes, oh yeah, we got 27 coaches. We're fine. So, we're not there yet. We're not there yet, but it's, I think you're getting close to max though. Cause you know, you got a lot of parts of the game covered. And what you end up doing is you end up duplicating, you get mixed messages, you know. So in our game, I like where we're at. Like, I only like two guys on the bench or two assistants on the bench. We have the goalie coach and an eye in the sky. I know there's some coaches that like, you know, three assistants on the bench. I'm not one of those guys. I'd rather have less voices, you know, yapping at guys in the game than is better. You get a simple message, you get a direct message, and usually it's a message that, you know, any coach could say it, but it's one clear message for players.
I noticed just the most recent game that you guys played, there was the late game timeout, and you didn't handle the players' huddle. I think it was Glenn Gullitson handled that part. Has that always been your case, that the assistants would do that?
Well, we have a laminated board where the numbers are put in. So that's all talked about on the pre-scout before.
Oh, okay.
So basically that's our power play group. He runs the power play. Mm-hmm. So when you're there, it's a power play group we have the certain setups that we want just with this laminated piece of paper that has the numbers on it. And it's just reminders. Everything's been taken care of. It's just reminders of face-offs, jobs, and where we're going to. So it's the power play group. So what's happened is, as you're coming down that, you're coming winding down looking for that timeout there, there's lots of moving parts. So he'll get that prepared. You know, when I'm dealing with the change, I'll have that prepared. So when the timeout comes, it's boom, here it is. So it's all collaborative, but at the end of it, he's just, here's a piece of paper. Here's where we're at. We all know what to do. Let's go.
That's the best I've ever heard that explained, why you guys structure it that way.
Yeah. A lot of that is talked about before. Like, if you got the timeout, you're looking at 30 seconds. If you got to stand at a board and draw out a whole play, they're not time. You got some referee yelling at you, let's go. And you got five players looking at each other. You go here. And just, we have it all. It's all structured out. There's just a simple reminder. Here's where we're at, and let's go.
Do you have to hold yourself back from jumping in? Like, no, this, anything like that? Or are you?
No, because most of it's all done in practice. Okay. Before, so we have the players. And so but Gully does the power play, does a great job for the power play. And he's, you know, those guys are pretty dialed into what we're looking for.
You can distract the referee.
Yeah, exactly. On the other side of it, you know, when defensively, like, that's where Jim Playfair and I will go down and talk about it. And, you know, the setup face-off or the face-off in our own zone when the other team's got the goalie pulled, we'll have a, you know, we win the draw. What side are we going out? Do we have the support? Here's what we're looking for. will be pre-scouted on what the other team is doing. You know, if they got a one-timer off a face-off or whatever, we'll be pre-scouted. Our players will know what we're looking for there, but just simple reminders.
So your day off, as we talk right now, you've done a radio interview with Stoff and now me. What's your escape during this crazy time? Or what's your activity?
You know what? It's been escapes are few and far between in this COVID era. You know, it's no different. I live in the condos across the street that are attached to the rink. And so it's, you know, you're pretty locked down here. Canada's different than the U.S.
Yeah.
My wife's been in Arizona since mid-January, hasn't been back, so I haven't seen her. So she's down in Arizona where things are a lot more open than they are here. But it's pretty much all hockey all the day, all the time. A day off is might as well wander over and watch the game. You know, we do some video and get ready for the game tomorrow. So much else going on here.
1992 Olympic silver medal, a Jack Adams Award. Do you know where those two medals or trophies are?
The medal is in a safe in my office, and the trophy is in on the shelf in my office at their home in Arizona.
In a safe? Why is the medal in a safe and the trophy on the shelf? Well, you need a bigger safe, I guess, for the trophy.
I don't know. It's been sitting there. I haven't looked at it, and I bet you I haven't pulled it out in 10 years. So
really?
Sitting in that safe for a long time, yeah.
Would you like to coach in the Olympics?
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't turn down that opportunity for sure. You know, I've played in two Olympics, played in 84 and 92. And funny, I go way back. I worked at the 76 Olympics in Montreal. I was playing for the Canadian national under 16 soccer team. And we were the ball boys at the soccer games in soccer in Montreal. Yeah, I was a ball boy. When the ball went off the field, I threw it back onto the players, right? So that's a long, long time ago. But that the one thing about Montreal is you got into – they talk about an Olympic spirit or the aura of the Olympics. And I was just a young – I think I was 14 or whatever it was then. And the aura of the Olympics was something that was extraordinary. And then I lived it twice as a player. So you'd love to do it. Anytime you can be involved in Olympics would be phenomenal.
I just got my accreditation badge for Tokyo this summer. Yeah. Hopefully everything goes ahead and I can participate from that. And that'll be, I don't know how many Olympics that'll be, but just looking at that, it gives me goosebumps. Yeah. And I can't imagine what you would go through as a player. Was how different was 84 to 92? Because it was different stages in your life.
Yeah, 84. I get asked that a lot because 84 was the last year of the amateurs. Like we played on Dave King had us all. We were living in a hotel and traveling all over the world as I had just come out of college and made that team. So there was no pros on our team. And so it was, you know, you had a group of young guys traveling all over the world and the Olympics was in Sarajevo. And, you know, we were underdogs going in there. U.S. was the big team, even though they were all college kids too. They had LaFontaine and Eddie O and some players and Chelio.
You beat them.
First game, we geared our whole season to beating them, and we played them 12 times during the, you know, the pre-tournament stuff, and they beat us. I think 7-5 they beat us. But Kinger had a pretty good plan for us. We played them the first game, and in our pool, there, whoever won that game was going to kind of, they had the upper hand to get to the medal round because we had the Czechs, I think, with us, who were a real good team then. They were a good pro team. Mm-hmm. And then there was U.S. and us, and Finland was pretty good. But whoever won the game between Canada and U.S., if you beat Finland, you're in. You know, you're in whether you beat the Czechs or not. So we geared everything to that one game in 84, and we were up 3-0 early in the game. And then ended up winning 4-2. So it was interesting experience. Like the whole thing with you, like I say, young guys traveling around the world. I laugh now. I think we were getting our hotel and meals paid for. I think Canadian government, we ended up making, I think, $7,000 or $8,000 that year of grants from the government, right? And just happy that we're doing it. And then in 92, I was playing with Washington. And pros were allowed to go there. And I went to David Poile at the start of the year And I said, look, I'm not sure how this is going to go. I was getting on in my career. And I said, I talked to Dave King. He's the coach of Team Canada. And he said, if there's ever a chance that I could go, he'd love to have me join the Olympic team. And in 84, we didn't get a medal. We lost in the bronze medal game. So I'd always said, you know, I'd love an Olympic medal. And so David Poile and I talked, and then it was getting down right to the deadline of when Canada had to put their roster in. And Dave King phoned me. He goes, what do you think? Any chance? And I called David Poile, and he said, no, we've got a playoff spot settled, but we'd really probably think you should stay. So I said, fine. And then the next morning, David Poile called me at like 7 a.m. And when the general manager's calling you at 7 a.m, that's probably not a good thing. Yeah. In my case, it ended up being a good thing. He said, Chip, we've talked about it. If you want to go, go. So I called Kinger, and it was the last day they could put the roster in. And Kinger says, we'll put you on. I jumped on a flight from Washington to Iceland, spend the night in Iceland. And I flew to Stockholm the next morning. I landed at 10 o'clock, and there was the final of the Globen Cup, their last game before the Olympics started.
Yeah.
And I got to the rink about 11:30, and the game was at 1. Kinger said, you want to play? I said, sure, I'll play. And jumped on, and we won the Globen Cup. I was only there for one game, but got to know the teammates, and then we went on to the Olympics, and we had a real good Olympics. So different experiences, but both great experiences. The Olympics are phenomenal.
Are you always in debt to David for that? Like,
yeah. You know, he was both Olympics. He was a guy. I mean, I'm in debt for him for, he took me out of college and taught me how to play defense. And that's the main reason I ever had a chance to play in the NHL, play in the Olympics. And, still good friends with him today. I brought him to Arizona. He worked on my staff there for, I think, 3 years. And he's got a new book coming out. I don't think it's out yet, but a new book on coaching that's unbelievable. It's coming out. So he spends his winters in Scottsdale and the summers up in Waskasoo and in Saskatchewan. But I still in contact with him all the time.
I love that, hearing the Waskasoo roll off your tongue. That is great. Before I let you go, Darren Elliott said, he was one of your teammates in 84, said you were serious then. When was the last time Dave Tippett wasn't serious? Like, how far back do we have to go?
Well, there's a lot of times when I'm not serious, right?
Elliott made it sound like you were dialed in.
It's, but when you're playing or even coaching, my mom, you know, she says, you look so grumpy all the time. I said, Mom, I'm working, I'm thinking, right? Like, you're always thinking about the next, what's going on. So the only time you ever see me is on TV when I'm in the middle of a game, when you're yelling at a ref, or I always look mad. They never put the coach on when he's laughing or smiling. Yeah. You know, it just doesn't happen. But in actual fact, I do laugh and smile a lot, just not when other people see me. So That's where it's at.
you know, Doug McLean, Jill would give him the gears for if she ever caught him on TV yelling or doing something ill-tempered, she would give him the gears. Does the same happen to you?
You know what? I'll tell you a funny story about that. My two daughters were going to a Christian school in Dallas, and they were, I think they were maybe about 10 and 12 or whatever. I'm not sure. I know it would be 10 and 14 or something like that. So, and I was coaching Dallas at the time, and I used to have a couple of things that fire engine went by.
Yeah.
I used to have a couple sayings that when I got mad, and my wife would tell me, you got to watch it, right? Well, one day, the teacher at the Christian school grabbed my oldest daughter, I think it was Nicole, and just said, you should tell your dad that people understand what he's saying on TV. So I, from that point on, I said, you know what, I don't want to embarrass my daughters. I said, I better tone it down a little bit, or put a card in front of my face if I really got something to say.
Is that where that started?
Yeah. Now I don't have to worry. I got a mask on. Now I can say whatever I want now.
this has been great. So before we let you go, expectations for the playoffs, does your group feel pressure, or is it just because it's a 56 game, it's different, everybody's got a shot, and you just let it roll?
I think you let it roll. You know, you let your, we've been trying to talk about building our game. all season. You know, we're building. You got to earn the right to be a playoff team, and if you earn that right, you got a chance. And, you know, I always think of pressure is a privilege. You know, pressure to get yourself into pressure situations, it's a privilege to be there. You've earned the right to be there, so you might as well embrace it. And that's what we're talking about.
We had Sam Bennett on last week, and we were talking about his duster. How long has it been for you since we had that thing?
You know what? I took it off. I had it. My children had never seen it. I got married when I met my wife 37 years ago. I had it on, and then there was one time we got beat in the series in Dallas. I was so mad. I jumped in my truck, and I have a lake house up in Minnesota. I drove up there by myself for a few days, and I shaved it off. I've never had it on since. So I've had a lot of people in Movember and stuff like that try to get it back, but just never got around to it again.
Done. Well, let's hope the winning grows in great strides for you. Thanks for doing this, Tip. I really appreciate it.
All right. No problem. Great to talk.
Being a ball boy at the Olympics, like, that is my favorite story. I love the shaving the mustache too, just on the road, dude, basically on the fly. Like, we're getting rid of this thing. But being a ball boy at the Olympics, so if he's a coach, if he happens to be a coach in 2022, that'll be four Olympic Games for Dave Tippett. And he's like a summer guy and a winter guy because of the games in 1976. Edmonton and Tip and company will finish second in the North Division, behind those Toronto Maple Leafs. Bob Bender, producer Robert Bob Bender, is here. We've ignored you the last couple of weeks. It's been so busy. Can I just bounce one thing off you while we bring you in?
Fire away, Darren.
Okay, it's nothing really, really earth-shattering, but would you rather? I love the game, would you rather? My kids love it. I won't ask you any of the questions that they usually ask me, but would you rather face Toronto or Edmonton in the first round of the Scotiabank North if you're like Montreal or Winnipeg?
I would rather personally, and this sounds crazy because of McDavid and Draisaitl, I think I would rather face Edmonton. And I feel like Toronto is poised to make a run and come out of the North. They're battle tested. I think I'd rather play Edmonton, Darren.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong reason. You're getting Matthews or McDavid and their entourages. And I ask the question because Winnipeg's flat spot has created a bit of a dilemma here. Winnipeg almost has a choice. They can rest some guys and get ready for the playoffs and then end up facing Toronto if they happen to fall out of third place, or they could fight and claw and hold on to third place and face the Edmonton Oilers. And we know Edmonton and Winnipeg have all that history. For Manitobans, it's a horror history. but Toronto, Montreal, I mean, they haven't played since 1977. So if Winnipeg finishes third, that means we get Toronto, Montreal since like the mid 70s or mid to late 70s. So that would be really, really, really cool. Like Edmonton, Montreal, they played before. Winnipeg, Montreal, they've never played. I just asked you that question because I would prefer the old Smythe division matchup. And I'm just going on history and what sort of gets my heart going. But I appreciate you taking part.
Well, Darren, I think I have to see it from both teams, really. But Edmonton, I have a bad taste in my mouth with what happened. I know it was in the bubble with what happened against Chicago. And I think Toronto, there's a little bit more pressure on their shoulders. But I think from beginning to end this season, they've been a better club. And the pressure, I think they respond to it by winning a playoff series here ultimately. And I just don't see them losing.
Well, how about this?
In the first round?
Montreal, of the four teams, of those four teams, Montreal was the only team to get out of the play-in round last year. Toronto lost to Columbus. Winnipeg lost to Calgary. And Edmonton lost to Chicago. So maybe we're overlooking Montreal. Maybe it should be who doesn't want to play Montreal.
Right. I have a question for you.
Okay.
You ready?
I love Bob's questions. Now this is going to be about ice cream or this is going to be about hot dogs. What's this one about?
The question I have for you, which everyone seems to be debating. Will Connor McDavid score 100 points? I think he's got 7 games left to play and he needs 13 points. Will he get to 100?
Well, he had 3 points last time out, and I can say that right now, and it doesn't matter when people listen to this, Bob, because he gets 3 points every game right now. So that's that's just flat out. So he has to average just around 2 points per game. I think he can do it here. I think he would have done it last year too. He had 97 points a year ago, Bob, in 64 games. And if he would have known that they were only going to play 64 games, he would have found a way to get 100 points in 64 games. He just, it's like Gretzky scoring his 50 and 39 and just coming up with one of those huge games. People find ways to get these kind of milestones accomplished. And Connor McDavid, they're going to be facing Vancouver a bunch down the stretch. Vancouver's kind of out of it right now. And they're going through the transition of playing out the string after that big punch. I just think he's going to do something. And that's another thing. Edmonton and Vancouver, superstars. Gretzky owned Vancouver. I think it just continues that little tradition. I mean, I started this thing talking about Winnipeg and their horrid history against Edmonton and not wanting to go down that path. Imagine Vancouver fans having to succumb to another incredible Edmonton Oiler individual and light them up like mm-hmm. Gretzky did over to McDavid. But I think he does it. I really do you think he accomplishes the century mark?
I'm going to lean to the experts. And I think I heard Gretzky say he's going to do it because he wants to prove that he can do it. And the great ones, like you said, find a way to get it done. But it seems like he's scoring 3 points a period almost. It's crazy. So I would say, and I think it'd be great for the sport. I think it'd be great to just follow him down the stretch to get 156 games. That will be something that you will talk about for years to come. So I'm hoping he gets it done. I think he does get it done unless they start resting him or, you know, he's not playing as many minutes, but I don't see it happening. I think Tip's going to run him out there and go ahead, kid, go get 100 points in 56 games.
I wonder how much you'll see Leon and Connor together down the stretch. Because of that possibility, whether Tip, like that balancing act between getting ready for the playoffs and telling your players, we got to be ready for the playoffs to let's go out and make something incredible happen. And you're right. Like if 100 points in 56 games, that should be worth two Hart trophies this year. They should just double up and give it to him. That nobody saw that cut. It was a couple of years ago, Bobby, we didn't have a 100 point player in 82 games. And now this, and he scored a goal the other night against Calgary where he just picked up the puck, Draisaitl, Leon gave it to him in at center ice. And it was just ridiculous going through everybody. And,
unreal.
We're so fortunate to have Matthews and McDavid and Kane and all these incredible players. And then when it really comes to roost is when you have the great players talking about McDavid, like he's on another level, you can't ignore that. There's no arguing that when the incredible players are going, that guy over there, he's the best in the league. He's better than all of us. That's where you go. So I'm rooting for, and the intensity and the attention that it would give would be pretty remarkable. And just having something cool out of this season.
Hey, last thing I have for you, Darren, remember the days when we were talking about Patrick Kane potentially winning the Hart?
Yeah.
And at the time, it actually seemed like a very viable scenario. But Connor McDavid, and you said it, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago, you said Connor McDavid has it locked up. He's the Hart Trophy winner. And I just look back and as we discuss and go through the storylines and, you know, the price was right for Kane to potentially win the Hart. But now it seems like what a ridiculous conversation that was, considering what Connor is doing and potentially could do in 56 games.
Well, he just put his foot down. It's like a 100 meter dash, and you think you're close at the 60 meter mark, and Usain Bolt just goes gone, and he wins by 5 meters. You don't have any control. Patrick Kane didn't get worse. Patrick Kane didn't fall off. It was more what Connor McDavid did, and that's the real cool part about this was everybody else played great. Connor McDavid just played that much better than everybody else, and watching him and he's just done it in a fashion that looked like it was I'm gonna take over. And nobody else can say anything about it. Like Tip said, teams have been able to to plan for him, not just a one-off, and he's still doing it. And that that gives you an indication that does it not kind of inspire you for the next couple of years? Could we see, like, is there any way we could see a 200-point season out of Connor McDavid? I'll be the first one to ask that question. Is there any way? And probably not, but 82 games, when you look at what he's doing in 56, it's cool. There's the odds would be very much against that because Gretz only did it a couple of times, but wow. It might be part of a vernacular in the next year or so. That'll just prove how many people listen to the very end of the podcast, Bob. If I get hate tweets of people saying, "Are you crazy? 200 points? Are you nuts?" That'll be the real proof of how many people listen to the end of this.
Fire these people up. Tweet at us.
Chirp
Mallard.
Chirp Mallard. That's the hashtag. Chirp Mallard. Hit the like button, thumbs up button, rate us. Leave a comment. So many people, Bobby, are listening to this this podcast and loving the interviews. Love to get the reaction, your comments, what you like about it. The Mighty Ducks interview. That was incredible, taking people down their memory lane there. So many great reactions to that. So leave us your comment. Leave us your opinions. Maybe you don't think Connor McDavid can get 100 points in 82 games next year instead of 100 points in 56 games this year. I'm just stoking the fire a little bit. I think he's
Stephen Brill, by the way. Stephen Brill. Producer, creator, Mighty Ducks. Go back, listen to Mark Stone. Go back, listen to Pierre-Luc Dubois and his dog. I think his dog talks a little bit.
I think his dog's still sleeping.
And John Cooper, you mentioned him last week. We've had some great guests. Connor Garland, I mean, we talked to him early in the season. Go listen to Connor. Go back and listen to the episodes because they all hold true. And we got something cooking for next week, early next week, with the playoffs around the corner. We'll have something special in the hopper for next week, Darren, so I'm looking forward to it.
I'm so excited. If we get the Smythe Division reunion between the Oilers and the Jets, that will just take me down memory lane. And having Montreal against Toronto, that's a matchup that I'm hoping for. And I'm still holding out hope above all hope that Florida and Tampa Bay finding a way to match up. But yeah, rate, like, subscribe, do all those things. Smash that thumbs up button if you're watching on YouTube. Let us know what you think. For producer Robert Bob Bender, I'm Darren Millard. Thanks to Dave Tippett of the Edmonton Oilers for joining us. And we'll chirp you later on The Chirp with Darren Millard.